This week on It's So Bad, what happens when you combine DuckTales, Mega Man, and Super Mario Brothers 3 into one game as we take on Shovel Knight on It's So Bad. Welcome, everybody.
Hi.
Hey, Mike.
There's a lot of people here today.
Michael, hello.
A lot of people like Shovel Knight.
Shovel Knight.
It's a beloved game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here with Steve. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Michael.
I'm here with Matt Z. You've added a letter to your name
since
last we spoke.
It's brand new.
So it's like, is it like Matt's or is it Matt Z, like it's, Dragon Ball Fighters, or Fighter Z.
It's like Matt Z.
Perfect. And we've got Matt 2.0, Matt M2.
Yes, sir.
Hello, and Chris, you're back again.
Hey, gang! Just happy to be here.
Sweet, we are all here, and you can subscribe to our playlist on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Stitcher, Podbean, etc., wherever you can get your podcasts. And we are adding another game to our endless list of games. This is our 69th game we're adding to the endless list.
Oh, hey.
Very nice.
69th. Our second indie game.
Encore had the honor of being on the 69th episode.
Yes.
But this is the 69th game.
69th entry on the list.
I'm glad we can double dip on 69.
Yeah. Yeah. We always want to double dip on the 69. Yeah. Yep. So, who wants to describe what the endless list is? Anybody? Bueller?
I mean, it's your show.
Yeah, why don't you do it? Do you ever describe
it? Fuck, you guys. So the endless list. It is a list of games. It runs from Super Mario 64 all the way down to Jurassic Park Trespasser. We have the aim to add every fucking game in the universe to our endless list. And the list is derived by our... how we enjoyed the game.
Drived.
It is defined by the graphics for the games and how they rank among them. The music, the gameplay, the overall package, the legacy of the games, we rank them based upon these various different measures. And that's how we achieve true glory and ultimate
enlightenment
is by adding every game to our list. And this is our 69th game. It's our second indie game. Our first one was Hotline Miami to this list.
Wow. This is only the second.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that.
Only the second one.
That surprises me.
As this is like a crew that I feel like plays a lot of indie games.
Yes. Well, I love indie games. But at the same time, you guys are always like, let's play Red Dead Redemption.
You were the one who picked Red Dead Redemption this time. I want to put that out there.
Sure. But yeah, so we're adding this game to our list. This is Shovel Knight, made by Yacht Club Games, published by Yacht Club Games, in June of 2014. What was everybody doing in June of 2014? Were you playing this game?
No, I'd never heard of this game.
I kickstarted it, I think.
You did?
So, did you?
Yeah, I played it when it came out.
What did you get for
it? Did you see it at PAX?
I didn't see it, not before it came out.
Okay.
No. But I feel like they've been at every PAX since.
Yeah, well, that's the big thing is that with this crew is they showed off this game for the first time at PAX East, I think in like 2012 or 2013.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that's how that's when they kicked off their Kickstarter effort. It was like the week of PAX East, and that's how they really launched as a company. Which is great, because we live in the area where PAX East is.
Right.
So tied to a little bit of history. But yeah, so when did you guys first play this game? Recently?
Yeah, just for this pod. This is the first time. Shovel Knight's in Runbo, right?
He is.
So I thought he was just like a character from Runbo at first, and then I saw it. I was like, oh, he's cool. I don't wonder why he has a shovel.
Yeah, I mean, they got a bunch of the SteamWorld people in that.
And then I realized they were all from different games. Yeah. So then I knew about him, and then I'd heard about like Hollow Knight too, so I kept confusing the two of those. But yeah, the first time playing for this pod.
And you kickstarted it. Matt, did you play it? Matt, to you?
I did play it. I bought the $40 Treasure Trove.
Oh.
Chris has been asking me, well, telling me for a while. It's a great game, so I downloaded it. And actually, right out of the gate, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a great game, easy to pick up. Did you play it before this?
I played it right when it first came out.
Yeah, I had it for the Wii U. And luckily, even though they're still adding content, well, they're not anymore. They just finished it. King of Cards came out on the Wii U, which in the original release, which I picked up for like $20 used back.
That's funny. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, 4 or 5 years ago.
King of Cards is the last piece of content?
Yes, and Showdown that they just
released. That's what I was going to ask. That's like the battle mode that they promised.
Does that make King of Cards like the last Wii U release?
No.
Or is it just like how like Just Dance still comes out for like the Wii?
Right. I just saw actually that there's a shoot 'em up collection and something else coming out on the Wii U in the next 6 months. So yeah, they still have weird.
Still cranking out stuff for the Wii U. Huh?
It's like not cranking. It's like 10 games released a year.
There's a crank.
Yeah,
I see Nintendo's strategy: lull you into a false sense of security, think the Wii U is gone forever, but just you wait, it's going to be the main console again in a year.
It's not. It's terrible. It's not. It's not a great console. People will always say that it is a hidden gems and it has a lot of hidden gems on it. But it's really, compared to other consoles, it's pretty terrible.
It's the perfect Mario Maker machine.
Yeah, and sure.
That's kind of it.
Yeah, and it has HD Zeldas, which are really good.
Right, yeah.
The Twilight Princess and Wind Waker.
Hopefully those eventually come to Switch when Nintendo gets bored.
Yeah, you would hope so, but... Yeah.
It did plant the seed for the Switch, too. Like the controller with the screen in it, the Wii U. So
right.
We have to... They perfected it with the Switch.
Someday we're gonna add Zombie U to the list, and I think Matt might like that. Matt Z.
I have to get a Wii U first.
It's on the PC too.
Oh,
it's just Zombie there, without the U.
Okay.
But the thing with the Wii U is that a lot of it is you have to look down to pick stuff up. You actually have to look at your tablet.
Right.
And it's always have something there behind you. So, like, there's zombies out there that you can get attacked while you're picking stuff up. So it's, like, interacting with the tablet in pretty unique ways. But we're getting off track. Have you guys played a lot of indie games? All of you? I mean, you guys have.
Yeah.
Matt Z and Steve, I think.
I played some. I wouldn't say I've played a ton of them, but I've played a few.
Matt too, have you played a lot of indie games?
Not so much now. I remember like on my 360 they used to release like a lot more content. I think the most recent one I played is it Inside? Is that?
Oh yeah. That's from a while ago, but it's
That counts.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, totally.
No, totally. Yeah, for me, I think that I went through this, my like arc with video games is that I was really into video games up until like the PS2, and then the PS3 came out and I was like, everything's getting kind of samey. And then when indie games started to like become a thing in like the early 2010s is really when I started to get it back into video games. So I had like a 5-year stretch where I was just like out from like 2005 to like 2010.
The 360 arcade though was like a big... Mm-hmm. Right. The Xbox. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was like
Geometry Wars.
It was like a starting point, right?
Right.
So then, but it like started to blow up with Steam and stuff like that. And when
I guess that's true. Steam.
Shovel Knight was released, Hotline Miami, mm-hmm. and that was like the second or the first wave, really, of indie games. When you had 2008, you had Braid come out. You had 2010, Limbo came out.
Yeah.
And then 2011, Terraria. I played the shit out of Terraria, Bastion, Binding of Isaac, Minecraft. And then leading up to Shovel Knight, you had Journey on 2012, Fez, Spelunky came out for XBLA, FTL, Hotline Miami, and the year before Shovel Knight came out, you had Guacamelee, Rogue Legacy, which I fucking loved, Papers, Please, which I also fucking loved, SteamWorld Dig, etc. And then you come up to 2014 when Shovel Knight came out.
I just got the second Guacamelee.
You did?
Yeah. Don't like it as much as the first one.
I have
first one's classic, but
yeah, first one's great.
I have the like 1 and 2 collection. And yeah. I have not dipped into them yet. They're probably going to be my
first
next...
one's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's going to be my next Metroidvania that I play, but I'm still like a little bit getting through Bloodstained, that one. But yeah.
Oh, how is that Bloodstained Ritual of the Night?
I'm playing on the Switch and
not so great.
Not so great. And when it takes like 30 seconds, or not 30 seconds, it's more like 15 seconds, but even 15 seconds to load in between screens is a lot.
Is that your main gripe with it, just the loading screens? Well, or is there other things?
And the frame rate is like half of PS4.
Okay. Yeah, it just doesn't look good.
Yeah. That's a shame.
It is a shame.
I've heard really good things about that game.
I think the game itself, I haven't gotten far in it, but people like the game, but the Switch version is inferior, okay. That's good to know. Seems.
So back to Shovel Knight. This game you can find pretty much everywhere. We mentioned that it came out on the Wii U, but also came out on PS4, Xbox One. In the Treasure Trove, you can get all of the different pieces of content. Came out on the Vita, came out on the PS3, came out on OS X, the Apple there, Linux, Switch, 3DS. Came out on 3DS.
What is it not on?
It's on PC. It's on Amazon Fire Stick, or Fire TV, I should say, not the stick. You can play it on Amazon Fire, which is weird.
Is it on Stadia?
I was going to say, can I play it on Stadia?
I don't think it's on Stadia yet.
Wow. Stadia can't support that. It's too graphically intensive.
Yeah, so this game, it's really interesting path forward, how this game got created. The people who made it, they originally were from WayForward. Are you guys familiar with WayForward Development Company? They make Shantae and a bunch of licensed shit. So they make Godzilla Domination.
I was gonna say, I know that from something.
Yeah. They also made like recently Azure Striker, Gunvolt, and they worked on Bloodstained.
Okay.
WayForward, SpongeBob SquarePants, the movie, the video game, Barbie, Magic of the Pegasus. They did a lot of random. Yeah.
That Godzilla Domination game is awful.
But the big thing that they did that is important for this podcast is that they worked on Contra 4, the core group who made Shovel Knight. They worked on Contra 4. They made A Boy and His Blob, the remake that came out on the Wii. And they worked on Double Dragon Neon. While they were working on Double Dragon Neon, Mega Man 9 came out. And they started talking about it as a group, the people who were making Double Dragon Neon, and they're like, we should make this game, and we should make a Mega Man game. And so that's how they basically came up with the idea to make a Shovel Knight.
Thank God they did.
Yeah, I mean, they quit their jobs. There was like four of them. They quit their jobs, and they went on to make Shovel Knight. They saw, because after Mega Man 9, there was like a big gap between, because the most recent Mega Man was Mega Man 11, right?
Yeah.
But
I don't remember 9 or 10, to be honest. 9 was the NES
Both the retro-style ones, yeah. 9 and 10?
Yeah, and 10 was like super hard, and not people didn't like it because it was so hard. 9 was really hard, too.
Right, and then 11 is the one that was a little easier.
Right, and they had like a gear system.
Right.
It just came out like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I know from the Jason Schreier book that their goal was like to make their own Mario.
Yes,
they wanted like an iconic...
In terms of like branding, right?
Right.
So they wanted to have a figure that like people could make into stuffed animals and into put on like cereal and stuff like that. So that's what the core concept of Shovel Knight came out of.
I don't know if they went up to the Mario level, but I think they achieved that. Like, Shovel Knight's a great character.
PAX, the most recent PAX this year, and so they were advertising or like demoing their two new games, and... To see their booth grow in size over the past, you know, X years, and you know all the branding that Shovel Knight is on, I think they've been pretty successful.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And like, you know, that now they have like a puzzle game coming out, and I think the other one is like a SteamWorld Dig clone.
Yeah.
But like,
it's like Shovel Knight Dig.
Right.
I think it's called.
Creative. But, they've done a good job, like, with the IP or, you know.
Right.
It's a very strong brand.
Right. So they wanted to do that. They also wanted to make iconic bosses, like the Mega Man series. So they came up with, instead of 8 robot masters, there are 8 villains, the Order of No Quarter, which are...
Great name.
King Knight, Spectre Knight, Plague Knight, Treasure Knight, Mole Knight, Tinker Knight, Polar Knight, and Propeller Knight. Mm-hmm. And then they had a Proto Man in there as well from Mega Man.
Yeah, and Black Knight too, but he's not part of the official.
He's not part of the order.
He's kind of a free agent.
They have their Proto Man as Black Knight. So right. Proto Man is like the guy who just is not really the bad guy, not really the good guy,
mm-hmm.
The tweener.
He's the tweener.
Yeah.
Is that a wrestling term?
He's not a heel, not a face. Just,
yeah, he's a tweener.
Shades of gray.
He's got shades of gray.
Even though he's
just black.
All black.
Yeah. You'd think he'd be the bad guy.
Do we have to talk about this again? How black does not equal bad?
It does in almost all media throughout time.
But yes. So originally, too, when they were making this game, they wanted to make it similar to Mega Man, where they were going to have a boss select screen, but they decided against that because they thought the progression would be better if they gave you like a tutorial level, and then they slowly built up your knowledge base of how to move through levels. So that's why they incorporated like the Super Mario Brothers 3 style overworld map, which you don't really see. And I'm really glad that they did that because I love that aesthetic.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, so.
And you can move back and forth and everything. Right. Like, I'm going to go back to town. And then you get, like, catapulted to the next,
That's the best. Take the shortcut.
Yeah,
launched across the map.
Love that.
So, yeah.
Did you guys grind at all when you were playing this game? As far as, like, trying to rank up, like, all your powers and get as much money as you... Or gold and jewels and stuff like that?
No, so the way I typically play video games is very thorough. So I will go everywhere and try to explore everything. And generally, in this game, I didn't go back unless I missed like some collectible that I wanted to get. But yeah, I typically had enough money. Like, I think my first run of Shovel Knight, I didn't grind at all, and I had every suit of armor, including like the gold one that doesn't do anything except makes you flip when you jump, which is right.
Oh, really? Is that what it does? Yeah. I didn't get that one. That's cool.
And it makes you sparkle. That's it.
Gotta have a little sparkle.
Did anybody else have to?
I think I did a little bit towards the end, I think.
Yeah,
much.
But. Yeah, there were times I would go back and forth, and I was like, I want to get this suit of armor.
Yeah,
I want to
yeah.
like. There's something specific I need to buy, and I need like 600 more gold or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Diamonds.
Apparently, being able to replay the levels was some sort of debate between the team.
Hmm.
Well, they would also creative decision.
They would also create like those like gemstone or like there'd be like a robber
the, like,
or like
roaming
a, yeah, there'd be like roaming things you could go and like little, do like a little challenge and pick up some gold. Gems, they're gems, not gold.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
I think it's everything, right? It's
gems,
everything.
Gold, it's money,
money,
loot,
loot,
give it loot,
that booty.
I don't know what they actually call it in the game. If they call it money or gold or
Bitcoins.
Gems.
Bitcoins.
Bitcoins, penny stocks.
But yeah, so one of the things too about this game, every one of the playthroughs, so Shovel of Hope, Plague of Shadows, what's the other one? Spectre of Torment, and King of Cards, they all have the Plains level, which is basically your Super Mario Brothers 1-1 level.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, what I mean is it's a tutorial level that they don't tell you what to do, they make you do what you have to do.
Yeah.
So they are really good in this game of teaching you through game design how to progress and use the abilities that you have. So the first level for King of Cards, for example, you reach a cliff where you can't get over it unless you shoulder bash into the cliff and then it flips you over, and that's kind of part of his repertoire, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then repertoire. And then Shovel Knight has to bounce on people, and you can't beat that level unless you know how to bounce on enemies. So really good. This game has one of the best level designs and progression path, I think, in platformers.
Yeah. And I think it's the thing I always come back to is you play through the different campaigns. Like, there's just kind of subtle tweaks to the levels that they do. Like, the core level looks the same, and you go to a lot of the same places.
Right.
But because your abilities are different, they just, like, tweak it just a little bit so that instead of, like, bouncing as Shovel Knight when you're Spectre Knight, you have to, like, do, like, a jump and a dash.
Yeah. And, I mean, as you see, I don't know, how many of the campaigns did you play through?
I played through all of Shovel of Hope and Spectre of Torment. I played through the beginning of Plague of Shadows and King of Cards.
Okay. So, the order of which they were released over the course of 5 years, because they were released from 2014 to 2019.
And they were all stretch goals.
Right.
They so thankfully committed to, unlike other...
Right. So all of the extra campaign, the boss campaigns, were all stretch goals from their Kickstarter. And they delivered on every single thing, which is great. It took them 5 years, but it's they were all good, so it was worth it. But it was Shovel of Hope, and then they released Plague of Shadows, Spectre of Torment, and in December of last year, 2019, they released King of Cards.
Oh, is that recent?
It just came out.
Right. Wow. So the thing about it is, like, Plague of Shadows, the level design is, like, very identical, except for some minor variations.
Right.
Spectre of Torment gets even more different, and then King of Cards is way different. Those level designs are way different from what Shovel Knight is. King of Cards has more levels, and they're shorter.
Right, there's like two checkpoints as opposed to seven checkpoints.
Yeah, and that's another thing we're talking about, inspirations. They took the bonfires from Dark Souls and they made them into checkpoints in this game, essentially.
And it's I discovered this by accident early on, but when you break, so they're like these staffs with a gem in it, and if you go by it, you activate it, but you can break the staff too to eliminate the checkpoint, but you get the gem.
If you guys routinely saved or if you broke the staff.
I think it was like the second time I played it and I didn't realize, like I just didn't have the memory that like, oh, this is a checkpoint, don't break it. And so I broke it and I was like, oh, this is cool, I got extra money. And then it was like right before a boss and I had to like go all the way back to the middle of the level. I was like, I fucked myself.
I think it was a cool concept, but I never felt I needed money.
No.
Yeah. So it never felt worth the risk of breaking.
They don't give
it.
You that much either. Right. Like, they give you some, but...
Yeah. So,
it depends on the... Some of them give you a lot.
Yeah.
And some of them give you...
And I don't know what they could have done differently if there was a different currency or what.
Right.
Yeah, maybe if there was a whole separate currency that was just devoted to breaking checkpoints.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. Like, if you got, like, a large gem or something like that.
Yeah, and you could only buy, like, armor with that or something like that.
But even that stuff, they fine-tune to... They also fine-tuned it, too. So, if, like... You reached a point where they're like, this is important for you to have a checkpoint here. They make it unbreakable. So some of those are unbreakable.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. The ones with like wings on the side are unbreakable.
Yeah. Well, I guess the checkpoints is kind of a good segue into, you know, what I really appreciate with the game is that every character, as we've been talking about, plays a little bit differently. And, you know, the levels are, you know, they're challenging, you know, they're hard. But I felt like because you have those frequent checkpoints, the game never felt unfair and it's challenging.
Right? Yeah.
And, like, it didn't bother me that it was, like, I could die 100 times, like, in one particular area. Like,
right. They said their ideal level length was a level from Mega Man. So those levels are based upon screen size width of a Mega Man level, except they improved the checkpointing on it.
Yeah.
That's what they tried to incorporate.
I feel like the average like playthrough of a level was 15 to 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, yeah, it's like perfect. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and Chris, to your point, like there was the only time I was like about to be like, this game's unfair and like I don't want to play anymore is through the end of Shovel Knight, his campaign, when you fall through and all the bosses are there sitting at the table.
Battle Royale.
And you got to fight that all again. I was like, I hate when video games do this. And I died a couple times and I was about to like just quit. And then I like walked away and I came back and I beat it. And I was like, oh, actually.
And they randomize them too. Like if you die and you're like, oh, I'm ready for this guy again. And then they get someone different. And you're like, oh, damn it. Like I just was getting a feel for this. But
sometimes too, like I died, I think twice. And then I beat it in my second playthrough. And because they randomize it, if you start off with somebody who's relatively easy, you're like, oh, it feels good. I can do this now.
Yeah.
And then if you don't, it's like, oh, God, I can't do this. Like, Tinker Knight's, like, pretty easy.
Well, at least they give you, like, a turkey after every boss.
Right.
You could get through it.
That's the Mega Man. This game was like, a directly influenced from Mega Man. And that's
like
what they do in every
Mega
Man game.
Much better Mega Man game than Mighty No. 9 was when that came out.
Yes, and that came out, like, a year after this game. Yeah. We should do that game on this podcast.
I got it for free when it was on. It was on sale recently for PS3 for free, and I got it.
The guy who made Mega Man, but he didn't really make Mega Man. It's disputed. He was instructed by somebody to artistically make Mega Man. But he never did any like the game design or anything like that. And he's the guy who made Mega Man.
Oh, he's
nine.
Like the Steve Ditko.
Yeah. So there you go. Steve, we know that you've played through. Have you played through all of these games?
Played through Plague of Shadows. That's the Plague Knight one.
Yeah.
I played through that. I played through Shovel Knight. And then I played, you know, the first third of the other two, King of Cards and Spectre of Torment.
Which one did you like Plague the best?
I liked Plague the best. I thought his mechanic is you hold down a button, essentially, and you build up a charge like Mega Man. And when you release it, you get, like, a burst jump. So you can double jump, essentially.
No, you can double jump and burst jump.
Oh, right. So you can triple jump.
Right.
And then most of your attacks, at least to start, are, like, a downwards throw.
Yeah.
So I thought that whole, like, traversal and movement and attack angle was unique, and I think that's why I liked that one maybe the most.
It was also highly customizable because you could change the arc of your throw, you could change the fuse on the grenade, you could change how the grenade exploded.
Right, I think there are three like parts to eat, to your weapon
that right.
you could change independently.
Right.
So I liked that one the most. I thought that was the most different from Shovel Knight, at least in my opinion. I mean, King of Cards was kind of a whole different game. Spectre of Torment, I think, though, was the only one that felt like you were playing a boss character. Like, he seemed the most, like, OP of all the characters you could be.
He was my
like,
favorite boss that we played.
Yeah. I felt like you were just tearing through everything.
Well, that's the whole point. Is like his mechanic is that he can dash through blocks. So that dash speed makes you feel really...
Yeah, it's not a negative thing. It just felt like you were playing a late game. Like, it felt true to playing as a boss character.
Yeah, that, and he can run up walls, and he can, like...
Yeah, you had so
vault
many...
Vault over like, walls.
You know, pretty easy abilities at your...
Yeah.
That was the coolest... I think that was probably my favorite campaign out of all of them.
That was mine, too.
I think the story, too, in that one is the best.
Yeah, that's a really good backstory on him.
The King... I would say, though, King Knight does feel like a boss character when you get into it, especially when you start seeing his special moves, which are just his moves when he's a boss. So, like, the confetti that comes down is one of his, like, items that he can get, which you can just put on the screen at any point, and the horns come in, and the confetti drops down and kills everything.
He's a very ridiculous character, and I love him.
Oh, my God. When I first saw him, I was like, this character's the greatest.
Just the idea of King Knight. It's like, you're a knight, you're not a king.
Well, I liked how, like, his friends are, like, the mice, too, because he's, like...
His starter subjects.
And it's, like, you almost, like, kind of start to wonder, like, I guess... be a little bit of spoilers here, like there's some points where it's like he clearly comes off as like the least redeemable character like in the whole franchise, and it's like there's certain points where it's like you think he's like going to have a shred of decency.
No, he's completely shameless.
And then
he doubles
down and becomes completely worse.
And isn't he always an early boss in all the campaigns? It's like
it's him and
Spectre Knight
are always the first ones. We've gone over so King Knight has the bash, that's his like main thing. He can bash and then he bashes into
and
walls,
he twirls, right?
You have to crash into like a wall or an enemy and to pop up, and then he spins,
right?
And you can start bouncing after that.
And all of the gameplay mechanics are way different from each other in this game, which is very cool. But yeah, so story wise, also like these games. So the way they imagined making these games was supposed to be like, what's your idealized version of what an NES game is? And like, NES games did not have like as gripping stories as this, as like emotionally wrenching stories.
Bowser has Peach and you have to go get her.
Right, right. But at the same time, like stuff like...
Or DuckTales, like going to get all the money for... Scrooge.
That's all about the adventure, man. That's just...
But they, like, pulled out little nuggets from that stuff. Like, okay, so do you think that Super Mario is, like, the boyfriend of Peach, for example?
Mario?
Yeah,
right.
Peach's boyfriend?
Yeah.
I think it's... Yeah, that's the common conception, I think.
It's not, though, because it's that's debatable.
Well, I'm sure
and they
it
like,
is, but...
They, like, tore out that strand for this game, because do you think that Shovel Knight and Shield Knight are together?
Yeah.
They are not.
What?
They're just partners in treasure gathering.
I don't know.
That's
man.
That's like a
Mulder and Scully partnership, though. There's chemistry.
Yeah, exactly. It is, but at the same time, like you look at Black Knight, and Black Knight's probably fucking Shield Knight.
I got a different read on that, though. I thought it was that he was kind of like her other love interest, or he was really into her, but it wasn't like reciprocated.
I think it's a different type of love.
Well,
that you know. Passion.
This is like some Buffy, Angel, and Spike type stuff.
Oh, yeah. See, that's actually a perfect example. Yeah.
I have no clue what that means.
You don't
and I'm really glad I have no clue what that means.
Twilight. The Vampire Slayer is a fantastic show. Let's just put that out there.
All right. Okay.
I was here mostly for the gameplay. I didn't, you know, the story was whatever.
But yo, at the end, when you, that was, that. At the end of Shovel Knight, when...
Oh, yeah. We're getting spoilers here?
Yeah, we're getting into spoilers here. So if you find out that Shovel Knight's going on this quest, and he needs to defeat the Order of No Quarter in order to get to the Tower of Fate, because he's trying to find his partner, Shield Knight, who was lost while they were searching for treasure in the Tower of Fate. She fell, and every time you beat a screen, there's three screens usually per campaign in the overworld, you get a, or actually I think it's every time you beat a boss, you get a flashback where you're trying to catch.
It's not every time you beat a boss.
It's every time you beat it.
I think it's like maybe every other time or the third time.
I think it's when you move the screen, the map.
That probably makes sense.
You have to catch Shield Knight. There's no penalty if you don't catch her.
Yeah.
In the dream state.
Right.
And you're usually fighting off enemies if they're just like coming at you.
Yeah. And if you fight off more enemies, you get more gems. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you should just fight off enemies and not catch her, but you always want to catch her.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
And it like goes into slow motion and you're like reaching out. You're like,
right.
And then he wakes up alone. Yep.
By the campfire.
And the reason why he's having the dream is because she fell and she... Right. When she was in the tower, and she fell because she got the amulet, which turned her into the Enchantress.
Is it clear that he knows she's the Enchantress early on?
No, I don't think so.
Because he's looking for her, but then there's also this Enchantress.
Yeah, I don't think he knows.
Yeah.
So I think he just fell, and I think he was like trying to find her in the Tower of Fate. And he gets there, he defeats Enchantress, and finds out that she's been Shield Knight. She possessed Shield Knight.
Right.
And then you have to beat the Remnant of Fate. Mm-hmm. And with the help of Shield Knight, and that whole thing is fucking epic.
Yeah. So and Black Knight's there too. Epic. And
yeah, well, that's at the end when the final blast comes. Shield Knight protects Shovel Knight, and she tells Black Knight to take him away. Yeah. And originally, the original ending was that Shield Knight was supposed to be implied to have died. And they changed it and made an after credit sequence where she's like huddled up with Shovel Knight.
Yeah. I was pulling for the happy ending, you know. I was like, they could go with her being dead, but come on, let's just wrap this up nicely.
Ending. Yeah, yeah. I like how the tower starts collapsing at the end for like, and you don't know why. You just think, oh, it's a video game trope. The tower collapses when you beat the final boss, and then you play a Plague of Shadows.
Right.
I understand why the tower is collapsing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really dug how Plague of Shadows was like so parallel,
concurrent. You saw concurrent. Shovel Knight happening like in the town when you get to the town. Shovel Knight's like walking above you, and you're
wandering through
shit.
The sewers. I really liked that.
Yeah, so Plague of Shadows doesn't really have that great of a story.
It's really what he's doing. Yeah, yeah. There's
a one-sided love story.
Yeah. Right. It's like him trying to like get a bunch of souls for Mona. That's the one thing I didn't play through. I played through the first part of the overworld.
Yeah, he's building the ultimate potion or whatever.
Is it a love potion?
But she like loves him anyways at the end, doesn't she? Yeah. Mona.
I think it benefits most from having just played or know, you know, the Shovel Knight story and just knowing what else is going on.
Right.
It benefits from.
It's funny though, you play
doesn't stand on its own.
You play through Shovel Knight and you see all these like colorful characters who are like in the village and stuff. And then they like, as you play through the other campaigns, a lot of them get fleshed out as to who they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I didn't know what the deal with the whale was, the triple king.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and then you play through King of Cards and he's there and you see he's like a boss in it, which is great. So that's fun.
Yeah, I didn't get that far.
Yeah. So
and then Spectre Knight is
probably the best story.
I would say,
Spectre Knight's the best story. So Spectre Knight, his originally name was Donovan. He was a treasure hunter with a guy named Luan.
Yeah.
And he went to the Tower of Fate, found the amulet, same amulet that turned Shield Knight into the Enchantress. And Luan dies? Or no, Donovan betrays him.
Yeah, well, I think Luan is trying to get the amulet to save his son, something like that.
Right.
And it becomes clear that like Donovan is just obsessed with getting the amulet, and then as I forget what the exact is, but like Donovan betrays Luan and then is cursed, and that's why he becomes Spectre Knight.
And then Enchantress is like, well, you can serve under me, and if you get me 7 other Order of No Quarter members, then I'll turn you back into a human. And he does that. She kills Reese, who's the guy with the boomerang, who turns out to be Luan's son.
Right.
And then he uses the amulet to instead of turning him into a human, to raise him from the dead because Reese dies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like how that one
ends. It's like really sad.
Yeah.
I like how that one ends, where he's like kind of put like in the swamp area where you ultimately fight him, and he just kind of takes on like the boss form, and you just go like, well, this is my fate now.
Right.
Yeah, he's a good anti-hero.
Is that story forming the No Quarter?
It's a prequel. So you also play like flashback sequences in between the levels too, where you're Donovan.
Because King of Cards is also a prequel,
right?
Like barely.
So it's like right up to the.
It's like the day Shovel Knight story starts. Okay. Basically,
King Knight feels like it's King Knight's fever dream. a lot of the time because it's like,
yeah, is like, any of this real?
It's, yeah, because it's like, the guy's just like, some kid is like, I want to be a king. And so he embarks on a quest to become a king and defeat all these people in cards, but not really defeat them in cards, because technically he doesn't have to play them in cards in order to take over their kingdoms.
Does the card game ever get more complex?
Yes.
It does? Yes.
So it starts, the card game is like, you have to have, so it's 3x3 grid with cards. You have to put your card, at the end of the game, your cards have to be on these gems, and you have to be on the majority of the gems in order to win the round, and there's usually like two or three gems on the 3x3 grid. Sometimes there's 2x2 grids, too.
Oh, okay.
And I think even more than that.
Because when I played, it was only, the center grid was 2x2, it was basically a 4x4 without its corners.
Okay.
That's how it starts.
Yeah, so the size of the board changes, but essentially what you want to do is have your cards on the area where the gems are, the spot where the gems are.
Right. But you can end it early by filling the middle grid?
No, so...
Or you have to be covering
the entire the area has to be covered with cards. That's how it ends.
Right, but it can... Oh, okay, and by default, that'll be covering all the gems, because all the gems
are always in there. And you can't have a move to make. Actually, no, you as long as if all of the slots are covered...
In the middle.
Yes, it ends.
Right.
But yeah, the whole thing is you push cards. Cards have ways you can push. It gets more complex because there's things like cards that will always push every turn.
Repeatedly.
Yeah, and then there are cards that will stomp and slam cards over. And there will you place it and it moves cards twice, two spots.
Okay. So is there anything that ever pushes something off a grid?
There's stuff that flips it to be your card.
Ooh, okay.
I like this cheating.
You can cheat.
Oh, okay.
Did you ever cheat? You played through it. Did you cheat?
I think I did it once, but
what's the cost of cheating?
Oh, nothing.
Like, why wouldn't you cheat?
it costs money to buy the perk. Oh, that's awesome.
Got it.
But
I never cheated.
Yeah, spoilers, like. You don't really like. Once I realized, I didn't really need to play the card game to actually complete the game.
No, you don't.
I kind of stopped after a certain point.
You you basically get a currency you can use to buy upgrades or weapons or something like that. I forget which one it is.
Okay.
And I did. I beat every house.
Yeah, I did. I stopped.
I got really obsessed with it because there were some that were just like win this game in one turn, and I was like, "Whoa, this is awesome!" Because it's basically just a logic puzzle.
That's what I was doing before I came over.
Yeah.
The puzzles, yeah.
It's very good.
I was more obsessed with the love story involving King Knight's mom.
And,
I love the king when you show up at his mom's house and she's like, oh, hey, my little prince.
He's like, Mom, I'm a king.
And then she starts banging the King of Pride more keep.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They didn't get that far.
And like every time, like it's like as the King Knight story develops, like the airship gets more populated. Like the dialogue between the two becomes like much more like sensual and stuff like that. And he's like, Ma, stop.
I just couldn't stand the movement mechanics of Plague Knight. I can't get over it.
It's funny because that's what I love.
I liked it too.
I think I just got to the point because I played through back-to-back Shovel Knight and Specter Knight, and I was like, I don't want to do this all again. Like, fight all these same bosses again.
Right. Yeah, I played them as they came out, so I think that's a little bit different. Plus, Specter Knight feels more polished than Plague Knight did and stuff like that. But
so, did you play it on PS4?
Yes.
Did you play it on PS4 or Xbox One? So did you play Kratos? Did you get the boss fight?
Yeah, but I did it forever ago.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Kratos?
Did you play Battletoads? Did you get the Battletoads boss fight?
No, where, huh?
So in Shovel Knight, in Shovel of Hope, they have the exclusive content for PS4 and Xbox One, and it's Kratos boss battle and a Battletoads boss battle.
How do you access that?
It's just on, they're like guys that appear on the... Yeah.
Because on PC, there is a roaming guy that has like chains similar to Kratos.
Oh, really?
That, like, swings back and forth.
Oh no, that guy's in everything. Yeah. He's like so, the metal guy.
So it's him. He's and Baz. Kratos.
I think. PS? Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
His name is Baz, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember.
He's like the wannabe knight.
Right.
And then there also is the.
Oh yeah, because in Plague Knight you beat him, and then he joins your crew.
Yeah, he's in every in all of them, I think.
Okay.
Same thing with the guy who's the fencing guy. I forget what his name is.
Oh yeah.
Propeller Knight.
Yeah. No, there's another guy.
Or Tink is a Tinker.
No, he's like a side boss.
Yeah, there's like a side boss that's like that. Like Reese is a side boss. He's the guy with the boomerang.
Mm-hmm.
Usually see first. So yeah. So let's get to our ranking. Where does this?
Oh, wow. Well, I've been waiting for this.
Is it going to be better than Mega Man?
So first couple things. To just in terms of ranking. This is so Shovel Knight appears as an assist trophy in Smash Brothers, which I think is a pretty big deal for an indie game. He also had an amiibo released, and you can use the amiibo content in any of the Nintendo versions, which is kind of like the special content for Nintendo. He appears in a ton of indie games. You mentioned Runbo, but he's also in Cook Serve Delicious. He's in Runner 3. He's in Blade Strangers, Indie Pogo. He's in a bunch of indie games.
He's in Bloodstained, too, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah, there's like some sort of deer or something. I haven't gotten.
Oh far, yeah, you're yeah. you no. The, he's a enemy.
Oh,
I totally remember him now. Yeah. And you can so every enemy I think has like a ability that you can get from them
in Bloodstained.
Yeah,
right.
So he has an ability associated as well. He's a secret boss in Azur Striker Gunvolt 2 as well.
Cool.
That's a good game. If anybody wants a Mega Man-y game, Azur Striker Gunvolt. It's a terrible name.
Yeah. It's not making me want to play it.
Yeah. I like Azur, though. It's a nice color.
That name makes me think it's an anime soccer game.
It's an anime. It's an anime Mega Man game.
Okay. Less interested.
Okay. So, our endless list, you can find it in the podcast description. It's also available on our Medium page. And... as I mentioned at the top of the show, number one is currently Super Mario 64. Number 68 is Jurassic Park Trespasser. This is our 69th game.
Nice.
And, I mean, what are some comps here? So Hotline Miami is our indie game. Do we want to start there and see where we go?
Oof. Right, because I was going to say, I think it's better, despite loving DuckTales, I think it's better than DuckTales.
Yeah. So where do you guys want to... see this. I see, like, for me, I don't think this game, just as, like, a high-end, I don't think this game could go above Mega Man 2, just because it's, like, also a very good platformer and also established a lot of the tropes that this game takes on, and it's still a very good game. But I don't know if... What are your guys' thoughts?
I loved this game, and I'm ready to put it very, very high on the list.
Same. I love Mega Man 2, but I've had a lot more fun with this game.
Yeah.
I mean, this game is very, like, expansive, too, right? Considering how much work they put in this and how many different campaigns there are and how many different gameplay mechanics there are and how well each of the campaigns did, I could see an argument.
Yeah.
So.
And like, legacy-wise, we were just saying this before, like, he's been in everything now. Not everything, but he's been in a lot. He's a very well-known character.
I'm curious where they go with him and what the next...
Is there a Shovel Knight 2?
And I do wonder if they're going to water down his branding if they keep making these, like, dig games and the puzzle game that they're putting out. Yeah.
They already kind of moved away from the pixel style with that dig game. It's more...
Yeah, it's like...
It's more...
It's not NES-y. It doesn't look as good.
Which I think that's a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I bet if they...
Don't know if they made... If they're making that. I think that might be a different developer.
Yeah. If they made another Shovel Knight property, I'm sure it would still be the same NES style.
So I do know that... I think the concept artist is no longer with them.
Right.
That made all the original art. So you have to wonder if that somehow is impacting, you know, the future development.
Yeah. They are developing it with somebody else. So that's probably impacting the art style. So where do you guys want to put this? It seems like a lot of people have said a lot of things. No one's saying any numbers.
I agree. It should go definitely higher than DuckTales. Better than DuckTales. The popularity for an indie game amongst all the consoles. We've all kind of played it on different things. I think that's pretty relevant.
Indicative of where it should might go.
Yeah.
One might say.
I mean, if we start... I mean, let's not go as high as Mega Man yet. But, like, just looking at comparables, like... 19 is Castlevania. I think it's better than that.
Yes.
Hotline Miami, a game I love, but I think this is better. I think it's better than Contra.
I think just to talk about Hotline Miami too is like Hotline Miami's very good gameplay, has a very good the music is like top notch, like absolutely outstanding. I would say that the story leaves a little bit to be desired. It's not as replayable as Shovel Knight, I don't think, to me.
Yeah, I think replayability is maybe a little different. You know, I think Hotline Miami is pretty replayable, but I think it's Hotline Miami's little one note.
Right.
I'm actually looking at this, and I'm kind of surprised that Hotline Miami is so low on this list. Like, there are games above it that I'm like, really? That's better than Hotline Miami? But I know it's just the virtue of the list.
Yeah. Right. We can address that in the future.
I know.
Yeah, the near-term future. So I would say that, you mentioned OneNote. I think the fact that there are four different campaigns, along with, we didn't even touch really on Showdown, which, did any of you play Showdown?
I did, actually.
Yeah, so I played it too. Yeah.
Oh, the Smash Brothers.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking fun.
It was awesome.
Really fun.
I will say I'm trying to not weigh the other campaigns as much as, you know, Shovel Knight, just because they came out more recently. Like,
okay,
you know, we have rules in place for a reason. We should at least somewhat, you know, acknowledge them. So to me, it's kind of a diminishing return for all right. the subsequent content.
Okay.
But still, I agree.
Kind of where we're starting, like, a lot of the games that are coming, like, a lot of the games that come after Hotline Miami, like, the Contras, Mega Man 2s, Metroids of the World, like, they're obviously going to beat Shovel Knight on Legacy just because of how they're older, more iconic. So putting that aside, but I'm just looking at this list going, where did I have more fun playing? And I enjoyed pretty much all these games that kind of like in that top dozen area, but so many of them I'm looking at going like, I was like, you know, I had more fun playing Shovel Knight than a lot of these games.
Do you know what they do really well in Shovel Knight, and thinking about it right now, this came off the top of my head, is there's this push-pull usually with, you want the gameplay, the player to be challenged, but you don't want him to be too challenged because he's going to get frustrated. And what Shovel Knight does is that perfect balance where it's like challenging, but not too challenging, where you definitely need to exert some effort and try a few times in order to get there, but you will get there, and it's not like super, super hard, super, 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 super difficult. It's just difficult enough where you feel good about beating it.
Well, it's like the Battle Royale example I gave earlier. It's like, at the time, I was like, oh my God, this is really difficult. How am I going to do this? But it only took five tries, something like that, six tries. And eventually, I was able to do it.
They put like the turkeys in between, like we were saying earlier. Yep. Like, it's not like any other Battle Royale, like a Streets of Rage, where you're just like, damn it.
Yeah.
And you can get into a really good flow in the
middle of it,
too.
And like, the way this game plays, like when you like hit like that final blow on the boss, it's like the most set, it's like a lot of games
slow motion and all like the screen
screens. Like a lot of games, like, you know, they don't have like that satisfying moment when you land the final blow. You always kind of like fall back and like, oh,
and he twirls the shovel.
I think to the point about difficulty too, like, it does a really good job. Every screen or every other screen has a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all like, you know, they're all more challenging. They're either more challenging to reach, or you kind of have to see the little, like, you know, difference in the wall that you can break through.
Right.
But I think, like, having so many secrets makes it so that they don't have to, like, really reward you with much. You know, like, sometimes you can get the artifacts or whatever they're called, you know, to upgrade your items. But having so many secrets that are pretty attainable, like, makes you constantly feel, it's like a dopamine rush of, like, I'm not only progressing through this game, I'm like beating this game.
Right. Yeah. And even if when you die, you leave behind, what is it, a tenth of your gold, or is it like a quarter? I forget what it is.
I know it's a proportion. I didn't know if it was constant.
It's a constant proportion,
You can go back and get your gold.
Yeah, and that, even that, like, is a dopamine rush of like, oh my God, should I go get it?
Yeah.
Am I going to go get it? Yeah. Risk reward of going.
Yeah, sometimes it'll be like a little bit below the ledge over like the bottomless pit. And you're like, do I want to do that right now? Because I have all this other money. And then
And then there's like acrobatics required to actually get that low and still get back up and not die.
Or you have to wait till it like floats a little bit higher so that you can touch it.
Mm-hmm.
You can also swing your shovel at it. I don't know if you knew that.
Or, I knew that.
Yeah, so.
And when you're Spectre Knight, it's really helpful because he can do like the projection form of himself.
Oh,
And you can like go through walls and like grab stuff that way.
It's very Ninja Gaiden too.
Yeah.
So we're currently at 16, which is Contra.
Yeah.
So do we think it's better than Contra?
Yes.
I think it's better than
I think it's better than Contra. 15's Final Fantasy VI.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to yield to...
That was a quick one.
I'm going to yield to Final Fantasy Madison.
I'm going to yes every... Like, I could go beyond Mega Man 2, but I am going to be an automatic yes up until... Like, this is one of those games I look at, like, between the gameplay, the aesthetic, and the story, like it was so much fun. I enjoyed it so much. It's like one of those games, like, I don't replay games a lot, so it's like it was one of those games, like, when I beat it, I was like sad that Shovel Knight was like no longer in my life.
I would say there's like a comparable on this is like a little slightly hidden, or just a different type of comparable. If you look at Star Fox 64, there's three different paths to play through in that game, and it's super replayable. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Shovel Knight is just as replayable, and it's kind of a similar type feel.
And
I think
that's 11.
Yeah, and I think that Shovel Knight is a more complete experience. I think Star Fox 64 holds up really well.
Yeah, I think so too.
But I also think that I enjoy Shovel Knight more, and I think it's a just given the various different campaigns, the various different the fact that they included like a card game that is very enjoyable in King of Cards. And then also the showdown mode, which is a multiplayer mode. I enjoy that a lot more than I do the Star Fox 64 multiplayer mode, for what it's worth.
Yeah, that I think the multiplayer mode in Star Fox is a little forgettable or just not worth playing.
I actually kind of forgot that it was even in it.
And I believe we played the shit out of that when we were younger.
Yeah.
And I look at some of these games and like, yeah, some of them have huge legacies. And I'm not saying I'm going to use this as an example. I'm not saying this necessarily goes above it. But like GoldenEye 007... very, very important game. But if you play the gameplay now, it feels very dated.
Right.
It's not that great. It's not that replayable. I guess it is. But with the caveat that it's a very old Nintendo 64 shooter.
I was, like, surprised how playable it was when we added it to this list. Yeah. I think if you go back and play it, I think it looks obviously looks terrible, but I think it's very playable.
Yeah.
I think the multiplayer suffers, but I think the single player game holds up better than the multiplayer does.
Right. But this is kind of the point about like the older games, and because this is a new game in the old style, like they hold up better over time because the mechanics are so like well defined, and it's in this like, you know, 2D platforming box, and Shovel Knight just plays so well. It's so much fun. I would rather play that than a lot of these games.
Mighty No. 9 came out, and that was replicating the same kind of game, and that was terrible.
Oh, I haven't played it, so
I'm just saying that, like, you know, even after all this time, just because there's been, you know, time to evolve doesn't mean it's as easy to pull off.
No, they did a great job.
And I think, you know what they did? I didn't even mention this, but in the development of this, they, like, restricted the art team to use NES palettes,
right?
And
with few exceptions,
And when they had exceptions, they had to like the way they developed this game is like a co-op type thing, so all of them had to agree that they wanted to do it. So when the artist was like, I want to use a different color that's not on the NES palette, they had to come together and be like, should we do this? Are we straying too far from our core mission? And they like restricted it. At the same time, the soundtrack also, they tried to emulate it with the NES soundtrack and add. Because the NES hardware only had like three channels.
Yeah. Right.
And so they tried to work it into three channels to make it as like authentic experience as possible, but they added more to make it more dynamic eventually.
Yeah.
It's just, so like they stayed in a box and they slowly like tinkered with it and tried to make it a little bit better so that it appeared like an NES game, but like an NES game, your idealized NES game.
Right. Yeah, this is such a love letter to like those old style games, but they have the modern perspective, so they were able to refine it and fine tune without going outside of that box too much.
And like, use and bring in inspiration from current stuff, like the Dark Souls checkpoint stuff and just tell a good stuff.
And tell a good story, too, where those old NES games may not necessarily have done that.
Right.
Yeah, see, that we're going to be covering every game ever made. So when we're doing this podcast 20 years from now, like, we'll probably be talking about some indie game, and we'll say, like, you know, an indie game like this probably couldn't exist if Shovel Knight didn't have
the
success that it did. So I think it's like the legacy. I think when I made my own argument of going, like, well, a lot of these games have, like, a already established legacy, I think Shovel Knight's legacy is in progress, and I think we're going to see, like, for years to come, like, the impact that it had with its background of funding. So,
but can I bump it up higher? Okay, so this game is also 5 years old, right? So, or 6 years old soon. What platformers, since this game came out, would you say are directly inspired by Shovel Knight?
Celeste, is that one?
Yeah, Celeste has similarities. I don't think it's really
Celeste is more like a Super Meat Boy inspiration.
Right.
Like the same
exactly
yeah but So that's when we talk about influence, yes, this is a really good game, but I don't know if there's like a lot of people have really made. I think maybe it's because this game dominates so much.
And it's not gone away in the past 5 years. It's like, how do you compete with a new campaign coming out for Shovel Knight?
Yeah.
Franchise people already love. You know, people that already bought it are getting it for free. How are you? It seems like a poor strategic decision to release a Shovel Knight
like game
as more content is coming out.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think the influence from Shovel Knight is not so much going to be on future platforms. I think you're starting to see, like, you know, Bloodstained: Curse of the Moon, a good example. Even though I guess it's probably in production at the same time, it's like that retro style game is now more mainstream again. Like, yep. You know, you go into like the PlayStation store or the Xbox store, there's so many like 16-bit style like RPGs that are out there.
Maybe like the art style specifically, but was pretty influential. I also say probably the music was probably influential on indie stuff.
Like there's so much like chiptunes music now being used in games, and you know, and I think it's just, it probably has empowered indie developers. Like it has shown that indie developers can make really important, successful games without the backing of a studio.
Absolutely.
And for me personally, like, I didn't have an NES, I didn't have a Super Nintendo, I didn't play a lot of these games growing up, and so I was never like super attracted to playing them now. And now, having played Shovel Knight, I'm like, whoa, this like awoken some desire in me to play like action platformers.
Yeah, this play is just like a polished Nintendo.
Like, I played this and then I immediately bought Hollow Knight, I bought Valfaris, I bought Celeste, and I'm like, I want to play through these. Mm-hmm. I love playing handheld mode on Switch too, like that combination.
That's a sneaky part of the legacy that we're not really touching on here too, is that before Shovel Knight, Nintendo didn't really work with indie developers.
Yeah.
So they specifically reached out to Nintendo because they were such big Nintendo fans growing up that they wanted to be on the Wii U as a platform. And Nintendo like started working with indie developers around the same time, like 2014, 2015, to like get them on their platform and like get them like small scale developers and really help them out. Like, they got a physical release, which was unheard of in like 2014 for Shovel Knight on the Wii U. And they made an amiibo. They like really in on the Wii U eShop for like a month. It was Shovel Knight themed.
Wow,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, now the Switch is like the indie powerhouse. Yeah. So sneaky part of their legacy is how well they did for the Nintendo.
They proved it could work.
Right. So.
Yeah. So I mean, as far as the ranking, we're at number 10, which is a competition that I think we should have foreseen, but I didn't. Maybe I should have played more Mega Man 2 before this podcast. But is this game better than Mega Man 2?
I would say, does this game go above
Mega Man? Does this game go above Mega Man 2?
So I love Mega Man 2. We're comparing great game to great game now.
Right. I mean,
Shovel Knight,
they're all great.
We're in the top 10.
Yeah.
Mega Man 2 is a lot of fun. Shovel Knight has story that I get invested in and get like an emotional reaction out of, whereas like Mega Man 2, I don't have that dynamic. I have really fun gameplay. I have a great time playing it, and it's kind of more a sense of accomplishment of beating Mega Man 2, where I get all that with Shovel Knight 2, but I also kind of get the story.
Yeah.
So
it's tuned
the heartstrings.
It's tuned in a way where the difficulty is it's a little bit more difficult than Shovel Knight, Mega Man 2. It's not too difficult, but I definitely feel a greater sense of accomplishment in having beaten Mega Man 2 today than in beating Shovel Knight.
But I mean, you know, I don't think sense of accomplishment really is all that matters, right?
No, it doesn't. Of course, that's just part of the piece. I mean, the other big thing is that that game was, in terms of it going back to difficulty, it was tuned in such a way that you got passwords after you beat a boss, so you could go back and, whereas Mega Man 1 did not do that. Mm-hmm. So it became a lot more replayable in that regard, and that I think was like a core innovation for that time, I would say.
It's true. I don't know. I have to yield to you guys.
I just have more fun.
I haven't played Mega Man 2, so I don't know.
My only perspective is if it goes above Mega Man 2, which is currently number 10, I could see it continuing to go up.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it clears this hurdle.
This is just a hump, I think.
Yeah.
Matt, too. That
I'm going to go with number 9.
You're saying it's better than Mega Man
2. I'm not a huge Mega Man guy, so it's going to go number 9 for me.
I would say if it goes above Mega Man 2, it has to go above Age of Empires.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it easily clears Age of Empires. Age of Empires is a great game, but
do we want to put it as our number 9?
I was gonna put it as a new number eight.
Yeah, I don't think we're done here.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, keep going.
I do not. I absolutely do not think it goes above Shadow of the Colossus.
That's what I'm saying. I think we still have Super Metro. Right.
That's what I'm telling you. I absolutely don't think it goes above Shadow of the Colossus.
I agree completely. I think personally, I would put it at the new number eight behind Shadow of the Colossus, but I'm telling you, replaying Super Metroid recently,
the jumping is just awful.
This game is so much better than Super Metroid.
Super Metroid had great parts, but there were such glaring flaws that were, like, partly because it's outdated, partly because of I don't know what, but it just frustrated me to no end sometimes.
Yeah, it was a step on the path towards a Hollow Knight. Right.
And I'm playing Hollow Knight now, and I love it.
Right.
Like, it's so much better.
Right. I am really excited for you to play Castlevania Symphony of the Night eventually.
I'm ready to play it, yeah.
Because that game is fucking amazing today.
I need to put some time in between my Metroidvanias, right. though.
Of course.
So many hours in
you need like you need like a good 3 or 4 months in between
them.
Yeah, I'll get there. You know, I don't really have like a compelling argument to make as to why Shovel Knight is better than Shadow of the Colossus. I mean, I just had more fun with Shovel Knight than Shadow of the Colossus, but I don't really have like some.
I think the thing Shadow of the Colossus has is just the intangibles that to me just it deserves to be above Shovel Knight. You know, all the games above it have a certain, I don't know, quality to them. Like the thing with Shadow of the Colossus specifically is to me that is like a complete piece of art just in spite of its flaws. And I don't know. I just wouldn't feel comfortable putting Shovel Knight above it.
From what I know about Shadow of the Colossus, and I haven't played it too, but like Shovel Knight is a nostalgia trip to old NES games. It's very much inspired by things that people already did. It is not itself an original creation. Shadow of the Colossus is like new work somebody like built from scratch. It's not necessarily.
When people are like, "Are video games art?" That dumbass argument. Like Shadow of the Colossus is the art game. It's very very good. I would say, you know, some of the movement controls are bad, but boss fight, all of the colossi that you have to beat are all unique and different. How you beat them is different, and how you scale them to get to their weak points is unique, and the story is very compelling. And just how the visuals and how they present the world is very unique and interesting and beautiful in a way that Shovel Knight just doesn't touch.
It seems like Shovel Knight, like, for all of its strength of it being this retro platformer, it's kind of its ceiling too, a little bit too.
What I would compare it to is like Shovel Knight is like going getting a delicious burger at Shake Shack. You really like it.
Right.
And I don't mean to debase it, but Shadow of the Colossus is going to get a 5-course meal at
a big juicy steak.
Right. They're both delicious, don't get me wrong, and there's a time and a place for each of them.
Yeah.
But one of them, you got to respect how the amount of work and prep they put into it versus I guess, I don't know.
They like as opposed to like refining like an old standby too.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't have a really compelling argument to make against Shadow of the Colossus. It is an art game, like Leisure Suit Larry.
Right. But, you know. Yes, of course.
But no, I mean, like I said, I had more fun playing Shovel Knight, but I also like really love Shadow of the Colossus.
And, yeah.
You know, I think just saying, well, I just had more fun playing Shovel Knight is not really the most compelling argument.
It's a pretty compelling argument, though.
But if I'm the only one,
if nothing else, you know, like no, I feel the same way. Like I haven't played Shadow of the Colossus, I probably won't. Or not anytime soon.
Do you think? I think a good compromise here would be to put it out as our new number eight, pushing down Super Metroid.
Yeah, I think that sounds good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Apologies to Mega Man 2 getting out of the top 10.
Kicked out. Oh. We have a new number eight. It is Shovel Knight. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining the podcast. This is one of the larger podcasts that we've had all year. It's probably the largest for this year. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Chris.
Hey, anytime.
Thank you, Mike.
And we will be back next week. You can follow us at It's So Bad Pod on Twitter, or you can follow moi as I post there. None of you schmucks post there.
Share the password. We'll post.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's going to happen. and then itsobadpod@gmail.com is the email. We have our annual re-rank will be coming up in the next few months, so if you want to send us an email about how you hate that Shovel Knight got to number 8 on this list, you can email us itsobadpod itssobadpod@gmail.com.
I think we'd more get hate that it didn't go higher.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. I think the Super Metroid fans are probably the most upset.
They're still using America Online discs, so they're
Wow. Disrespect out here.
I'm gonna create a burner email account to Juice Hotline IME ahead of that. Needs to go higher.
And you can also you can email us your recommendations that we'll get to in a month's time. But yes, we'll be back next week with another episode. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks, guys.